Okay, Killian, say this is the One Step Above podcast. The One Step Above podcast. Say welcome to the show. We appreciate you listening. Yeah? Welcome to the One Step Above podcast, everybody. Okay, everybody, welcome to the One Step Above podcast, a podcast dedicated to giving you insight on how you can always be one step above the opposition. Today is actually our first episode, so I appreciate your support, appreciate you joining in. Our first guest is a friend of mine. He's my personal running coach. He is an ultra running stud, Jeff Browning. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks, Mike. Good to be here.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you being my guinea pig. No better person than your coach to be your guinea pig, right?
Yep, totally.
So, you know, obviously ultra runners probably know who you are. I'm hoping that this appeals to more than just runners though. So could you give us a quick introduction on who you are?
Yeah, my name is Jeff Browning. I'm 49 years old. I am an ultra running coach, and endurance coach, also a competitive ultra runner as well. So I still race at a high level, train at a high level, trying to perform at a high level at my age against guys half my age. And they could be, they're young enough to be my kids. And then legitimately be my kids. I have an 18-year-old, so they're legitimately, and I had him at 30. So they definitely could have had kids that I'm racing against.
Hey, that's
what's that? That's your age.
Yeah, I'm 30 now.
Yeah, so... yeah, man, I could have been 19 when you were born, you know, if you were my kid. So, yeah, like, what else? I've been a graphic designer for 20 years and then shifted to endurance coaching about 5 years ago. And been doing that full time ever since. And then also running full time. What else about me? I kind of specialize in kind of high fat, low carb diet or kind of an ancestral paleo, Nutrivore, whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of catchphrases out there, but most recently that's kind of where I've kind of evolved as far as my eating and lifestyle. What else? I like to run 100 milers. I've run a lot of ultras. I lost count a long time ago of how many I've finished. I finished well over 130 ultras in my life. I've been racing ultras for 20 years and was a big mountain biker before that. So I still get on the bike a fair amount. I'm fighting a little bit of an injury right now at the moment. So I'm on my bike a lot right now. So, yeah.
So Jeff, one of the things that you said that really sticks out to me, and I know sticks out to a lot of people, if you were to Google your name, I noticed that there's three main things that pop up. One of them is that you're fat adapted. In the ultra running world, you don't see that too often, even though it is starting to grow. You see your amazing running resume. You've won quite a bit of races. I think you've won close to 20 hundreds, right?
21 hundreds. 39 finishes, 21 wins and hundreds.
Okay. And the other thing that pops up, and I'm just going to say it, we're friends, is your age. You know, like you said, you're 49. You're close to 50, right?
Like, yeah, I'm proud of 49. I just turned 49 in August. So I just turned 49 okay. A few weeks ago.
So I think that's super incredible. You know, you're out there, you're top 10 ultra runner of the year for the past 3 or 4 years. You've taken top 10 at Western States for the past few years, except for this
4 years in a row. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I don't know how public this is, but I know you told me you like set one of the fastest times for the final 50K at Western States last year, correct?
Yeah, the last 37 miles, there's a Strava segment for that, for the race because of the river crossing. It's really the only time people run that segment. Last year was really competitive for the top 10, and the last three slots of the top 10 were 8th, 9th, and 10th, and I was racing in that zone. And myself and a couple other runners were kind of duking it out the last 60K. And I ended up taking the Strava the Strava segment from Forest Hill to the finish, which is the last 37 miles of Western States 100. So it was it was tough, and we ran hard. We were surging a lot, and a lot of like I'd luckily done my speed work coming into the race.
That's incredible, dude. And I mean, if you look at the Strava segment, if I mean, obviously there's runners who don't upload to Strava, but I believe it's just you and Kyle Pitari who have sub 6 hours on that section, right?
Yeah, and Patrick Regan. We're the only three that have sub six on that segment. We actually, the three of us, those are the three guys. So Regan and Kyle and I and Patrick were duking it out for the last three slots, 8th, 9th, and 10th. I ended up in 9th. Regan in 8th and Kyle in 10th. And to give you a perspective of how close that race was, the last 7th through 10th were a minute and 57 seconds apart.
That's nuts.
In a 100-miler. So that's how we were duking out. Three of us were on the track at the same time at the finish line. So yeah. It was intense. It was an intense final five and a half hours or whatever of the race.
Yeah, that's incredible. Like I've gone out there for the past few years to work, and this was actually my first year running it, the year that you, Kyle, and Pat did that. And when I had a terrible race, but when I heard that you guys did that, I was kind of bummed out that I wasn't there at the finish to see that. That sounds so incredible.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. Like throwing down, we were throwing down, you know, for my what I'm capable of at my age, as far as like, you know, my speed work pace, I was throwing down my speed work pace in the last mile when we were on the pavement. Like we hit anywhere from an uphill 7:10 mile to 5:15 pace on a slightly downhill running down to the track on pavement.
Mile
99. We were hauling. I've never pushed that hard. I didn't even know it was possible. Look, even after 20 years, that's what's interesting about ultra running is that you always find a new ceiling every once in a while. And you go, wow, I didn't think I could do that. And I guess I can. It just shows you like human potential. Like we have a lot of mental barriers to what we think we're capable of. And we're more capable of more than we think we are capable of.
Totally. I heard once that running an ultra is 90% physical and 90% mental.
It is. I think it's 120% mental. 120. especially in the second half of hundreds. I just think it's really hard, you know, like I never thought I could have run that kind of pace for the last 37 miles of 100. I never pushed that hard. But, you know, I had to find that place inside you that like says, no, I'm going to keep pushing. No, I'm going to ignore the pain. I'm going to keep pushing. I want this. And so, you got to find your motivator.
Definitely. I think that's super incredible. And then just like I said, you know, the thing that sticks out about you is you're 49. People, when they see you, they see that you're just crushing it out there. My question to you though, has it always been that way?
No, I mean, I got into the sport in the early days was just to finish them. I came from cycling and climbing and backpacking and mainly cycling, mountain biking. And I just wanted to like try them out. I had a friend that was into them and he got me into it. And shout out to my friend Rod Bean for getting me into ultras and getting me hooked on this sport. But he got me into it. And I just, you know, at the beginning, the first, you know, couple seasons, I was just trying to finish them. I had heard about Western States 100. That was my first 100 in 2002. I started running my first ultra in 2001, Hag Lake 50K near Portland. And I was just trying to figure them out, finish them. I was hiking most of the hills, you know, and running easy. I didn't do any speed work. I didn't do any kind of, I was still on my mountain bike. I was only running 3 or 4 days a week because I would get injured otherwise coming from, I couldn't handle the volume at first either. So I would add volume on the bike, you know, a couple days a week, 2 or 3 days a week. So I was supplementing with cycling to keep my endurance volume up, and then and just kind of figuring them out those first few seasons, and ran sub 24 hour at Western States for my first try at 100. And that's when I was like, huh, I like these things. And that was really, you know, I thought I'd just be one and done, and it would be like kind of a one of those, you know, check it off your to-do list. Yeah, just your one of those things you're like, oh, I did one and done and did it, like, you know, doing a marathon or something. And it said, oh, yeah, have you run a marathon in your life? Yes. Have you run a 100 miler? Yes. But after I did it, I kind of was hooked on it. I was hooked on the community. I was hooked on just the whole scene was really cool. And I liked the aesthetic of like the simplicity of ultra running, you know, after coming from cycling where you have to make sure that you have all your tools and you got to deal with gear, you know, like specific, the technicality of dealing with cycling. Cause you know, if you have a breakdown in the backcountry, like you're a long ways from home and you got to push and hike a bike out, that sucks. So you got to be able to fix that bike on the fly. So there's a certain level of skill set there that goes with with mountain biking, especially. And I just like not having to deal with all the gear. Just grab, you know, water bottle and a couple of gels and, you know, a pair of running shoes and you can go head up and climb a mountain. So, I like that simplicity of it. And that's what it really attracted me to the sport at the beginning.
So when that shift happened, like when you ran that sub 24 and kind of got your wheels turning, was it always like, did it become pretty natural for you after that? Or did you have some hard times when you were trying to transition?
Excuse me. Yeah, I definitely had some hard times. I had a lot of injuries in the first 4 or 5 seasons because I had muscle imbalances kind of set up from cycling where my hamstrings were a little stronger than my quads and it should be the opposite. So I had some, you know, patella tendonitis going on, knee, you know, kind of runner's knee type symptoms going on multiple times. I had an IT band syndrome flare up. I had plantar fasciitis in another season. So on and off over the first 4 or 5 seasons, I definitely was struggling at times during the season where it was just like, setback, 6 weeks off, back to the bike, you know, through that whole time. But I wasn't willing to like accept that I couldn't fix it. I've always been a tinkerer. And so like trying to figure out the puzzle and, you know, the body's a puzzle and sometimes you have muscle imbalances from doing other activities or from being sedentary or whatever. And I just had to figure those out. So I used strength training. I'd grown up lifting weights and I knew enough at that time to know that I could probably fix this with strength training by fixing the muscle imbalances that were going on. And so I worked with a strength training coach in 2004-05 off season and then 2005-06 off season. And that really helped like get me back like injury free. Like I came back after those sessions, those winter sessions, you know, 3 or 4 months of really training hard 2 days a week with a strength training coach. I luckily was a graphic designer, had some trade out with this guy who needed some branding for his personal gym. And he was a personal trainer with his private gym. So you couldn't go there and buy a membership and just go work out. You had to only be training with him. So I had helped him brand his training facility in Bend, Oregon at the time. This was back in like 2003, 2004. And that really got me, the strength training really helped. Like from that point forward is when I started performing. Like once I could train consistently without setbacks and got the muscle imbalances, because I had to work on like lower leg strength, like your lower quad, like vastus medialis, the teardrop muscle on the inside, on the medial side of your quad that's right above your knee. When you imagine like a bodybuilder, when they flex their legs, that teardrop muscle that's right by the knee on the quad, that muscle is responsible for good knee tracking. And mine was pretty weak. I had really strong upper quads, really strong hamstrings from cycling, from pulling on the stroke, you know, the back stroke of cycling. And so it was really affecting knee tracking and then causing tendonitis and swelling. And I kept just having that pop up over and over. And once I fixed the muscle imbalances, because when I had an assessment done with a strength training coach, you should be 150, you should be, let's say you can lift on leg curls when you're laying on your stomach, you curl your legs lifting weights. We looked leg curl, leg extension. Leg extension is when you know, flex your leg forward when you're sitting. So that's your quad strength. And we looked at hamstring strength with leg curls. My leg curl was 150 pounds and my leg extension was 100 pounds. And it should be the opposite. You should be able to lift about 150 pounds, let's say, comparison. It should be 150% of what you're lifting is your leg curls. So I was the opposite, which was causing tendonitis. So once we figured that out, we really worked on my quad strength and my lower quad strength, and it like magic, you know, it's crazy when you find what the root cause is. And that was my, you know, once I figured that out, then every other issue I had after that, I just was like, there's a fix for this. I can figure this out. Now, sometimes it took a long time. I had in 2009, I had a major setback of plantar fasciitis, and it was, I could not get on top of it. It kept flaring up and kept flaring up. And it happened in like the winter time when I was just like base training. And it was really, really frustrating because I just couldn't figure it out and it kept flaring up. And so I finally, in that spring of 2009, I just rode my mountain bike and I raced a 50-mile mountain bike race. And I just completely quit running for like 5 months. And I just mountain biked. I think that year, normally I ride about 1,000 miles a year or 1,500 miles a year, and then run about 2,500 to 3,000. I ended up, it was the opposite. I think I rode like almost 4,000 miles that year and only ran like 1,500 miles. So because I only got like half a season in of running because I was cycling so much. But I mean, so that was really frustrating, but I had to, you know, use that mental, like take that, you know, turn that mental corner to like focus on like healing and like accepting that I have to quit running for a little while, which was really hard at the time. Cause at that point, you know, that was like whatever, 8, 9 years in to ultras, it had become part of my identity as well. You know, I really enjoyed running and it was like a stress reliever. I was sponsored, so there was that pressure as well. So it was a tricky time, but you know, I got through it, and now I know the warning signs of for plantar fasciitis, and I know what to do for me when it, if it starts to rear its ugly head a little bit, I get on top of it before it becomes a major issue. So I learned something from it too. You always come, the challenging parts, you always come out with something. If you're looking for it, you'll come out with something that you can learn and pick out of it. And
if you're looking for it. Yeah. So there's two things that you said that I think really sticks out, and I hope the runners who are listening gets a takeaway from that as well, but the importance of strength training. I know, yeah, there's so many runners out there, and myself included, until I started having you coach me, that overlook strength training, that think that, you know, why spend 30 minutes strength training when I can be running for 30 extra minutes? Like, that's the mentality I used to have all the time. Yeah. And then the other thing too is that the importance of taking time off if you need it. And I know you're trying to teach that to me still.
Yeah. Well, and our sport tends to attract addictive personalities.
Yeah.
Because it's a way for us to funnel our addictive personalities into something somewhat healthy. And I think that's what, if you look at ultra runners, we're very self-motivated, because to train 6 days a week or 7 days a week sometimes, or 5 days a week or whatever, that you have to like carve that time out. You have to be dedicated. You have to like, you know, find that time in your schedule, especially if you're balancing job and family and kids. You know, I have three kids, so that's always been a juggling act to try to get it all in. But I do, you know, to your point, it's really important to like that extra 30 or 60 minutes of easy running you're going to do a week, the benefit you're going to get from that versus the benefit you're going to get from strength training, like full body strength training, is huge for longevity, for, you know, strength through full range of motion, mobility, all kinds of things that are going to benefit you not only in the short term now for injury prevention, but in the long term for mobility and strength as you age, you know. And that would be like one of my top three things. If I was going to say, when people ask me like, what do you, for longevity in your age, what do you contribute to that? Well, strength, mobility, nutrition, those three things, everything that has, it has nothing to do with running, but everything to do with running, right? So I think that's the most important, that's a very important piece of the puzzle as you age, especially after age 40. And I would argue you need it all the way through, but like you're doing, you've embraced it, the strength training piece, and you prioritize it. And you know, I'd say about half of my athletes I coach prioritize their strength. They've taken that to heart and realized there's a benefit there, and they see it and they embrace it. And you know, everyone's different and everyone has to come to their own revelation too with that kind of stuff.
And I want to point out too that ever since I've embraced that and took Jeff on as my coach, I've really not had any injuries. So the guy knows what he's saying. And when it comes to longevity,
dude, you have good biomechanics too.
Oh.
And I think that helps. I mean, I've run with Mike quite a bit. We used to live in the same town in Utah, so we've trained a little bit together, and so I've run behind Mike, so I've watched his gait. So don't let him fool you. He has good biomechanics too. So that's definitely an added benefit.
Well, regardless, ever since I've taken Jeff's advice, I've noticed quite a big difference, especially in injury reduction. And when it comes to longevity, you know, if that's your goal in ultra running, then I would take the advice from somebody who's 49 and still crushing it out there. And then too, like for those who are listening that aren't runners, I think the takeaway from what Jeff's saying, just in relation to life, is that it's important to take self-care, to like take self-maintenance. Like, you know, we hear of people who like, you know, are working 80 hours a week and mentally are struggling from that. It's important to take a step back and take a break and do stuff that you love and to just really focus on helping yourself mentally. So
yeah, and sometimes that can be as simple as getting out the door and walking in the neighborhood with your family, you know, or your wife or your significant other, or whoever that partner is in your life, you know, just get out and like smell, you know, look at the birds and the bees and smell fresh air and go to a park. If it's, you live in a city, go to a park and get some nature in your life. There's been studies on showing the healing properties of nature and that. My other one, and Mike will learn this quickly, that I'm really big on right now, and I just am on a kick, is nose breathing. So get out in the park, nose breathe, shut your mouth and nose breathe and think. It's really good for like lowering your blood pressure, lowering your heart rate, oxygenating your system. So learning to slowly inhale through your nose, exhale through your nose. I'm even to the point where I'm sleeping right now with a little piece of tape over the middle of my mouth, to keep me nose breathing through the night. So anyway.
Well, some of us, it doesn't come that easy. I didn't realize
you have to train it. It's hard. Yeah. If you've been a chronic mouth breather your whole life, it's definitely, for me, I'm like half and half, but I noticed that once I started concentrating on it, that I'm a really heavy mouth breather when I'm running, especially if I'm running harder. And I've really tried to concentrate on that lately. And then also at night, when I lay down and go horizontal, my mouth goes wide open and starts snoring. And you don't sleep as well because you're not getting as good oxygen uptake when you're breathing through your mouth. So you don't get as good. One thing I've noticed since I started taping my mouth shut, and this is not taping like putting a piece of duct tape over your face out there, people. There's a book called Breath by James Nestor that just came out. And Joe Rogan just had him on his podcast as well. Super interesting take on like the art and ancient history of breathing techniques. Super interesting. It's all these pioneers in what he calls pulmonauts in breath. And, you know, Wim Hof's one of those that's out there currently. It's kind of pushing breath stuff. There's other people too, but it's some pretty, it's an interesting read. And it's really got me thinking. And so since I'm taking a little tiny piece of medical tape, the cloth medical tape that kind of feels like cotton, I make a stamp size piece, tear a stamp size piece and put it over the center of my mouth, on my lips to remind my brain to keep my mouth shut at night. So that way I can still cough out the corners of my mouth. I could still breathe out the corners of my mouth slightly. But it forces your body to really inhale, exhale through the nose. And my wife says that I'm trying to snore still at night, but I'm not. I'm making little noises, but I'm not making the normal like sawing logs. But the one thing I found, and this is an interesting side note in this, And this can help anyone out there. You don't have to be an ultra runner. You just, nose breathing is a very important skill set to train your body to do. The one thing I've noticed is that my dreams are very vivid and they're very detailed. So, which is probably a sign that I'm sleeping deeper.
Yeah.
At night, because I used to be kind of restless at night. And I think that's because you're mouth breathing and you kind of wake yourself up. You're not getting enough air all the time. So it's almost like a form of sleep apnea if you're a heavy snorer. So like, I didn't even realize it, you know? And so like, I would get up, I'd be restless, and then I'd roll over, and then I'd wake up and roll over. And I was really restless. And when I kept track of like your movement at night with a watch, so I use a Suunto, and you can wear it at night and it can kind of show you how much sleep you got. And it keeps track. If you're restless and moving, it kind of counts it as not sleeping. And so I was getting only like two and a half hours of sleep a night, even though I was sleeping going to bed for 7 to 8 hours. So now I've been showing like multiple hours of sleep. So I think I'm sleeping deeper. So that's been an interesting side note for health.
So I think I know the topic of our next coaching call, because I'm a terrible sleeper.
And I think this is something we can talk about. I'd highly recommend the book. It's on Audible as well, if you like to listen to stuff. Really interesting data in that book.
So, that's awesome. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So Jeff, before we finish up, where can everybody find you?
Website, gobroncobilly.com. is my coaching website and athlete website. And also on Instagram, Twitter, is Go Bronco Billy's my handle. So find me on social media as well. And, or just Google my name.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it too. And then for people who are listening, are you taking on coaching clients right now?
I am at the moment. Yep. Okay. We're at the end of the season and going into fall. So some people are going into an off season. So I always have a little turnover around in the fall. So I always have a couple slots available in the fall typically. So at the moment I have a couple slots available if anybody's interested in reaching out for coaching. And I also do one-time coaching calls too. So 30 and 60 minute slots that are available on my website on the coaching page. So if you don't want to commit to monthly coaching, you can also check out that for some consulting if you needed just a one-time call too.
And I'll vouch for both, because I'm doing the full-time coaching with them, and with that I get a call every few weeks, and you can get a ton of information out of this guy in a 30-minute phone call. So but my running has improved quite a bit ever since being coached by him full-time, so highly recommend him. And Jeff, with these final couple of minutes, I know you've said a lot of advice, but if there's somebody out there that's listening right now that's struggling with running, maybe not feeling motivated, maybe feeling like they're injured, what one piece of advice would you give them right now?
Patient.
Put you on the spot. Patient?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm dealing with an injury right now. I'm dealing with a little Morton's neuroma, which is basically like an inflamed nerve sheath between my metatarsal heads and my left foot. Pain in the butt, pain in the foot, I get it. Better term. But it feels like a stone bruise on the bottom of my foot, on the pad of my foot. And so I can't run right now because it just irritates it. So I've had to embrace getting back on the bike right now full time, and strength training. So I can strength train. There's certain movements I can't do. So I have to alternate. I have to do some alternative movement. So normally if I was doing step back lunges right now, I can't like weight my foot bent right now because it irritates that nerve sheath. So I'm having to like evolve my training a little bit and try to, so I'm always big on if you're injured, if you do something you can do that won't aggravate the issue. If that's going for a walk, then that's going for a walk. If that's biking, then try that. If that's an elliptical machine, if you can't do that, then work on mobility and strength during this time. Find something you can focus your energy into in that normal slot of training that you'd be in. You normally be training 30 to 60 minutes a day. Find something else you can do to keep aerobic base if you can do something that doesn't aggravate it while it's healing. So patience with healing. Like, healing's a hard one. And this has been a good humbling experience, because I haven't had a moment of teaching me empathy for my athletes on a deeper level, because I haven't had any major injuries for like a decade. Cause I've been really good on being kind of proactive with mobility and strength. I've had little things, but I've been able to get on top of them within a week, you know? So I haven't had a major setback in a while. And so this is one of those that I finally had to come to terms with, like, man, I got to take time off, and a really like legit time off. And so just be patient out there, you know? And the other is mentally thinking about it too, like really concentrate on healing. A lot of people, when they get injured, they get depressed, and then they start eating bad. They eat more crap. They overeat. They drink more. They do whatever to, which doesn't help your healing. That's just going to cause more inflammation. You're going to cause more issues, and you're going to prolong the healing process. So really focusing in on nutrition, mobility, everything.
Perfect, buddy. I appreciate that.
Yep.
Everybody that's out there, listen to Jeff. He knows what he's talking about. He's crushing it. Thank you for being on the show, Jeff. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. Had a great time.
Wanted to give Jeff Browning one more big thank you for being my first guest on the show. There's a reason I asked him to be my first guest. He has so much knowledge. I mean, it's the same reason I want him to be my coach. He cares about people. He has so much advice to share. He truly is a wonderful person. So thank you, Jeff. For those of you who listened, thank you again. This is basically how the podcast is going to work. It's going to be a short 20 to 30 minutes. We're going to talk with some amazing people. People who, as you look at them right now, you just see them doing amazing things. And, you know, for some of us, myself included, you see people doing these amazing things and you think that that's all they've known, that they've always just been rocking it. But in Jeff's situation, as he shared, he planned on making his first 100 a one and done attempt. He dealt with injuries at the start, and instead of just stopping, he kept going through. He tweaked some things, and now he's 49 and crushing the ultra running scene. So I hope that those of you who listened got something from that. If there's something you're going through, keep pushing. You have no idea what kind of greatness lies ahead of you. For those of you who aren't runners, same principle applies. If you're struggling with anything, just keep pushing. It's going to be so worth it. You know, I'm personally grateful for Jeff. If he didn't push through those first few years of ultra running, then I may not have met him. And, you know, I wouldn't be living the lifestyle I'm living right now. So I truly appreciate him. I hope you enjoyed the show.